Welcome to Catholic Stuff You Should Know, the J10 Initiative.
Hey, welcome to the podcast. Do you remember that scene in Wayne's World where they go, 5, 4? That's what Father Sean just did to me. This is Father John.
This is Father Sean.
And this is Catholic Stuff You Should Know. Good to be with you today. As we are, Father Sean and I are in the midst of logistics and planning and scheming and poring over maps because we are about to head out on a new adventure.
And I feel like we just got totally spoiled going to Wilderness Exchange. we got a bunch of free stuff because we were one of the first 50 people in the store for today their grand opening.
We got free t-shirts. How sweet is that? And free
coffee mugs.
Wilderness Exchange is a store that... did you notice I dated myself by saying...
That was hilarious.
I remember the old... He was like, you were shopping here 25 years ago? That's a bad sign. So Wilderness Exchange is this tiny little mom and pop shop. Started as a consignment operation and then started selling really good outdoor gear. And it's right next to the gigantic... monolithic REI, which is a great store, huge flagship store.
We were
just bouncing around today. Went to my brother's bar. I told Father Sean I just finished writing the series of Advent meditations, and one of them is on at my brother's bar, which is the oldest bar in Denver.
Well, I'm going to be reading that for next Advent.
I know, but it didn't even intrigue you. This is the problem with phlegmatics. What you're expecting is like,
No way. That's amazing. That is awesome. Tell me all about it.
That's exactly what I was expecting. How did you and your genius, how did you put that together? That's incredible. I've never thought about that connection between the bar that we're eating a burger in right now and Advent. You are amazing. You after all these years, you continue to astound me.
You continue to astound me, but here's the thing. Once I read it, then I really will be astounded. I'm sorry. My reaction was more like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Here's what I learned about phlegmatics today. The more excited you are, the more they go into like power save mode. So I come at them full hard. I'm just psyched. We've been working through gear, getting everything together. We're down to the last nitty gritty details. And he's like, oh, you seem pretty excited about the trip next week. I'm like, yeah, and so are you. So quit knock it off. But the Benedict 100, we've talked about this. It's coming. It's happening. This podcast comes out on Thursday. We leave next Tuesday. We are in the backcountry for 6 days, skiing from Aspen to Vail.
It's going to be awesome.
And we are very stoked.
Super stoked, yeah. 100 miles. I can't remember why it's called the Benedict or the 100, because it's not the Benedict. It's not St. Benedict, and it's not 100 miles.
I think we should dedicate it to St. Benedict, but I think the Benedict 100 is named after Benedict Fritz.
That's right. He was one of the founders of the hut system, or
Fritz Benedict,
I think,
or Eggs Benedict. One of these. We don't actually know anything, he was one of the original founders of the huts that we're going to be skiing into. So, if you're ever in Colorado in the winter and you want to get just a really unique experience, come on a hut trip. Mm. They have these 10th Mountain Division has these huts all over Colorado. There's a number of private ones as well. They are not luxurious, but they're everything you need.
Yeah, except heat, but there's fire.
There's fire. I think they get pretty warm in there.
They do, except when
for Vance's cabin. That one is not warm.
That one was not warm. You were also like deadly sick when we went there. I was deadly sick. Have a good excuse for why you were cold.
Yep. I just laid there like a corpse for 3 days, and then they somehow got my body out of there.
It was so funny. We were celebrating Mass, and we woke Father John up to celebrate Mass. I'm celebrating. He's con-celebrating, and I'm trying to preach, and he like... Father John always gives like these incredible reflections on like Mary and the backcountry and surrender and receptivity. And I'm like trying to preach, and then I look at you and you look absolutely dead. Yeah. Like you just did not want to be there at all.
Yeah. I wanted to die in that moment. Not because of your preaching, of course, but because I don't know what happened. I just got knocked down. And when you're at 12,000 feet and you're sick, it's not fun. But hopefully, knock on wood, we're all healthy and we have a good, safe trip next week. So we are covering 86 miles in 6 days. There's a team of 11 guys. We have a number of different people coming in and out, and this is our big adventure for the year. We've been planning since January of 2024, so it's really going to be exciting. But We do priestly things every once in a while in between all these adventures, because we're going to talk about the book today. So people are really thinking, this is what do these guys actually do for a living? Why are we giving to this podcast or whatever? So, yeah,
that's right. We're grateful that you listen.
Yeah. And there's so Father Sean here at Our Lady Lourdes, and I've been helping out here as well. So I've had a really great time plugging into the parish, doing Wednesday masses for my nephews and all the kids at South Campus. But it has been it's been a great time.
That's right. And some exciting news that some would say is exciting, some would say it's not exciting, but I'm moving parishes earlier than anticipated. But April 1st, no, it's not a joke, I will be starting at St. Thomas More Parish in, I guess that's technically Centennial, but it also has an Inglewood address. So I'll be starting there April 1st, which, I would say it's bittersweet. It's hard to leave your first assignment. I've loved my time at Lourdes, at the parish, St. Louis, but it's time to move to the next assignment.
Yep. It is, so that shows how much we plan these things. I was kind of gesturing towards, do you want to talk about the move? It is public, and it's a big deal. Father Sean has really poured himself into this parish, and people are they're devastated that you're leaving, but you're not going far. And like I said, you know, your first parish is always it's a special one. It's in some ways it's always a favorite, I think.
Yeah, feels that way.
Except for Father Brian Larkin, that's probably not the case. But there are some guys who not. But many times, first parish is like, this is where you first experience priesthood, and you live the life of the sacraments in this community, and you just experience the intense love of that people have for priests, which is amazing. And
it is amazing.
Undeserved. They just love us way more than we realize, and that we often appreciate. So
that's right. Yeah, I remember when I first started 4 years ago now, and people just like, they have an intrinsic respect because you're a priest, because of how you've given your life to Christ. But I'm like, either people really like me for me, or is it the office, you know? Like, why do people actually like Father Sean Conroy? And the more that I'm a priest, the more that I realize it's because of the office. It's not because of I'm cool or anything, you know? But I mean that, like, in all sincerity, like, people have just really loved me, and I feel really moved by that. And we had our school gala, which you also came to, 2 weeks ago, and it was a great night, fundraising for the school, and I was really moved. Father Brian, our pastor, spoke some words of just gratitude and thankfulness for my time here at Lourdes, and then proceeded like a 45-second standing ovation that I had no idea how to respond to, so I just stood in the corner awkwardly as people were kind of standing and clapping for me. But yeah, I'm really going to miss this place. It's been a great 4 years that I'll cherish forever.
It was a rousing ovation, and it was deserved, and it was not just for the office, it was for the man. Mm-hmm. So you can't separate the office from the man.
Sure.
And I think that it's not in the mind of people, but the mark you've left here is because of the person, the man that you are. So it's been a great 4 years, and it's going to be a great last few weeks here for you. And again, you're not going too far. So I have the difficult thing. Priests take a day off during the week, and Father Sean's my mountain playmate, so he's on Tuesdays now. So I got to figure out how I'm gonna.
That's right. Well, because
the rest of the guys are lame until July. So, anyways, we have a there's a book launch / signing thing happening on March 2nd. It's been advertised on the podcast social media. If you're not on social media and you're around Denver and you want to come, 3 to 5 p.m. John Paul the Great High School on the 2nd of March. Thank you. March 2nd.
Sunday. Yep.
There's going to be a lot of guys who are on the trail, including the three through hikers with me, will be telling stories and answering questions and signing some books if people want that. My mom is making a massive charcuterie. She's very excited about this long, long table of charcuterie. She's just kind of a charcuterie master. So if you didn't like the book, come for the charcuterie. We will want an RSVP, and if you need that, if you didn't get that information, just reach out to us through the podcast email, catholicstuffpodcast@gmail.com. But we'd love to see you. Love to meet you.
That's right. Yeah, it's going to be great. I'm going to be there as well, and I will not be signing books, but Father John will be signing books.
Yep.
And no, it's just going to be great to reminisce on some stories. But what a feat. I mean, writing my, you know, master's thesis, which was what, like 20 pages or whatever, 25 pages, I thought was a feat. But to see your dissertation and now this book, come to fruition, come to light, has just been absolutely great to see. And yeah, again, congratulations on the published nature of the book, but also the publisher. Ignatius Press is just a very solid publisher to go through.
It's been a dream, and I just, looking at this book right here, it's just like, I still can't believe it's real. So I'm really grateful for some friends who have reached out, who have started reading it and are enjoying it. So that's just always a real gift to hear. So it's unbelievable. We were just at REI and we were chatting it up with some of the employees, and I was like, how do I get my book here? And they're like, what's your book on? It's like, on the Caro Trail and on spirituality. And then they're like, what's your name? Like, Father John. And they're like, okay.
No, they're like, what's your email? Father.Nepple. It's like, what?
And then they're like, well, there's one problem. And I thought they would say the religious thing. And then they said, well, the problem is, you know, we're not going to buy them from you at cost and sell them. We need to make money. And I was like, oh, that's the problem. Okay, you have a Catholic priest who wants to indoctrinate and do propaganda for the Catholic worldview in your REI. And that's right. Your problem? No problem. I'll give it to you for free. So anyways, that was kind of funny. Probably nothing will come from it, but at least we...
Well, she said she was interested. She goes, this is the type of book that we would totally put on our shelves. But
yeah. So... I gave Father Sean an out on this one. I said, you know, we don't have to keep talking about the book. I'm happy to keep talking about it. And he's like, yeah, let's do two more. So
I want
to
do the podcast or the book.
So yeah, we're gonna do it today, and then one more in 2 weeks, and then basta, così. We'll leave it. So I'm gonna take the lead here today, and these aren't gonna go too long, but I want to kind of pull out the first episode was part one was kind of like, what is this project? How did it come to be? Mm-hmm. The second one was a deep dive into your crew, which was the
chapter 17,
the Derping Corgis, and the days we spent together on the trail. And that was super fun to just reminisce on that. And a lot of those guys, I hope will be at the book launch.
The challenge is they're all in college now.
Oh, so. That's right. Yeah, that's true. They're all grown up. But today what I want to do is I want to talk about metaphysics. And I want to pull one strain out of the book, which is kind of runs through the book, but is a deeper strain, and it's a harder one to get the head around. When you hear words like metaphysics, it's scary. It's like, whoa, what does that even mean? And one of the things that I lay out in the introduction is the idea that the Catholic worldview is metaphysical. And I just want to talk about what that means, because there's a lot of people who don't understand that. I've never heard that before. And then there's a lot of Christians who would actually reject that Christianity has a relationship with philosophy, natural reasoning, these kind of things. So the first thing to say about metaphysics is it's not the department of Barnes & Noble that you have seen. Yeah. Metaphysics means, in Barnes & Noble land, I think it means kind of new agey kind of stuff. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I don't frequent Barnes & Noble much anymore.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like, even Greek philosophically, right? Metaphysics literally means beyond physics. It's like the step after physics, if you will. So it's the completion of the natural sciences. And so for the secular mentality, like metaphysics would be like a new age spirituality.
Right. So the most famous treatise on metaphysics is from Aristotle, which is his book, The Metaphysics. But metaphysical thinking is something that belongs to the Greeks. And we've talked about this in prior podcasts, but there is this very powerful moment in about the 6th century BC where the world starts to kind of, all over the world, there's this kind of awakening to the consciousness of a deeper vision of things. Like, just they're starting to think more deeply about things. There's kind of a religious awakening. And in the ancient Greek world, there is... the birth of philosophy. Mm-hmm. And the birth of philosophy is grounded primarily in the discovery of this very fundamental concept. In fact, the most fundamental concept, which is called being. So metaphysics is the study of being qua being.
Right.
What does qua mean?
In as much as?
Yeah, as, basically. Yeah. So being qua being is what metaphysics is. Now you say to yourself, well, what the heck does that have to do with anything? What we have is, at the very foundations of reality, what do we know about things? We can say a lot of things. We're sitting in a room right now. There's a couch here. I'm sitting with another human person. There's a tree outside. What are these things? They're being. They're existing, and there's different ways that things be, but everything is. That's the basic foundation, is that things are, that they exist, and that was a Greek discovery in a very particular and powerful way. That was developed very systematically in the metaphysical thought of Plato and especially Aristotle, and that it's like a river that makes its way through human history and then collides with another huge river, which is the Old Testament and God's self-disclosure to his chosen people, who are the Jews. And so the confluence of these two rivers happens at the moment of the incarnation, but it really began prior to that, where what we'll call Hellenization, Greek thought, metaphysical thought, begins to kind of affect and transform the way that the Jewish people are reflecting on their covenantal relationship with God. And it starts to do that in like the 4th, 3rd century BC. But by the time we get to Christ, we arrive at this very definitive moment where there's this providential guiding of thought that would just draw these two deep, these two rivers together, so to speak. And the confluence happens in the Roman world. So Christianity could be defined as a transformative synthesis of Jewish, Greek, and Roman thought. And that is the kind of trinity of worldviews that kind of come together in this unprecedented and totally unique way of thinking, which is the incarnation, the incarnational worldview that we have.
And so would you say that when we say the Judeo-Christian worldview is the summary of what you just said?
Yes. Yeah. But and the later Jewish tradition is really getting, because what happens is the Jews go into exile in the 6th century, and they encounter the kind of wisdom traditions of the East and the West, and then the Greeks under Alexander come in, and there's this, it's a really tragic story, but in the midst of that, there's this kind of beautiful providence where they're starting to kind of face and engage, what you have is kind of this, like, this natural rising up as human beings are kind of transcending themselves and moving towards God. You have this descending love and God's covenantal promise, and they just kind of hit, so to speak, the ascending movement of man and God's descending love. And the ascension itself is that kind of natural philosophical tradition of, like, we want to understand things. We want to get above our life. We want to move to the next level. And that's really the heart of metaphysics. So when I talk about in the introduction that metaphysics is part and parcel of the Christian tradition, what I mean by that is not so much that Christianity gets enveloped under this concept, right, which is being, because being is not a concept. Being is God. God is I don't want to go into this too much because it's too complicated. And, well, it's not too complicated, I just can't explain it well enough. But there's a distinction in the way that different things are, and all of them have existence. They exist, but they have different essences. So human beings, there's an essence to being human, and that's a limited kind of being. We're not our own. And the beauty of what Aristotle began and what Aquinas really kind of brings to fullness is that God's essence is his existence. So that God is being. So he's not a being. He is being. So the tree outside, that's a being. Sean Conroy here, a being. Couch, being. These things are all being. Being in different ways. But God is not a being. And that's probably one of the hardest things to get our heads around, and one of the really most important ones, is that he is not another being. He is being itself.
Right. And the English language is poor in this area, because in all the other languages, like, what do you call it? In Latin, right? It's like there's the verb, but then there's the infinitive. And so, like, to say I am, you would say ego sum, but the infinitive is esse, meaning being. But in English, like, the infinitive that we have would be to be. Like, God is being itself. Like, he just is to be. Whereas my existence comes from outside of myself. I'm not being itself. Maybe two practical things just to connect the dots here. The So yes, the Greeks built on the Judeo kind of the Judaic ideas here. Judaism, right? This really harkens back to Exodus 3:14, right?
Yeah.
When God says, "I am who am." And for centuries, it's like, what does that mean? Like, what do you mean God is like, "I am who am"? Like, tell me your name, Moses says. Like, when I go to Pharaoh to say, "Set my people free," who do I say sent me? And God says, "I am who am," sends you, right? Like, and there's a wrestling of what that means. And the Hebrew language, Ehe, it's tricky to understand what that means. And so it's not until it's translated into Greek that then when these Greek philosophers come about, to your point, Plato and Aristotle, they begin to develop this language of existence and essence and metaphysical language. And then Aquinas will pick that up and as a Christian say, okay, now that we have these Greek philosophical metaphysical ideas and ideals, what does that mean in light of how God reveals himself to us?
Yeah.
And so Aquinas weds those two together to say, this metaphysical language actually gives us a deeper insight to whom God is.
So it's like, it's not like we're overlaying and covering God's self-disclosure. So like there was this great 20th century theologian named Karl Barth from the Reformed tradition, not Catholic, but he's really good friends with Hans Urs von Balthasar. And this was their sticking point. This is where they always would fight. They would play, you know, Mozart together, and then they would fight over metaphysics. Sure. Or probably wouldn't even fight. They would probably just be, I don't know, drinking champagne and kind of talking about these things as gentlemen do, I guess. Exodus 3, as you said, that's the key verse to understand the Old Testament, the metaphysical heart of the Old Testament revelation, which is that God, when God reveals himself, he's using metaphysical language, because metaphysics is, again, not this kind of covering over of reality with some kind of ontological, or excuse me, some kind of like conceptual idea. What he's doing is he's saying the very language and intelligibility of reality is what metaphysics is discovering. Mm. So metaphysics is the tool for discovering how things are at its very deep level. And when God says, "I am who am," in the Greek, ego eimi, that is going to be that pure sense that God is pure act, pure existence, and that he is not, again, a being who's a part of things, but he is being itself. And that's a very powerful insight. Most important word in the New Testament on this topic is logos. So in the beginning was the word logos, and the word was with God, and the word was God. All things were made through him, and nothing was made apart from him that was not made. So one of the words in the beginning, this is John chapter 1, in the beginning was the word. So this is the pre-existence of the logos, who is Christ, the second person of the Trinity. So logos is a name for Jesus in his divinity. But then there's that line that we often skip over, all things were made through him. So all things were made through the logos. So logos is this impossible word to translate. We say word, which it means word, but it also means meaning, it means reason, it means pattern, it means intelligibility. Pope Benedict is so good on this topic of just, there's so much in this to unpack. But Christ is the logos of creation. And that's the point of this. He's the meaningfulness. He's the intelligibility. He's what metaphysics is seeking, but can't discover on its own. And so God has to reveal himself. And John's insight, using metaphysical language, logos, a metaphysical term, is doing that in such a way as to articulate the reality of God as it's expressed in creation. And I think that's really important, is that we're always looking to know God, but we've reduced him to an idea, to a concept, and being is not a concept. It can be conceptual, but it's when we talk about the being of God, we're talking about the kind of ineffable and self-disclosure of something that radically transcends our understanding. All beings that we know, everything that exists, that we're looking at, that we're perceiving, that we're sensing in creation, the mountains, the trees, the rivers, whatever it might be, human persons among us. This is just a tiny, tiny expression of the way God is. And the point for John in his prologue is to say, and the way that things are created is given through the Logos, through Christ. So Christ is not just this random guy who shows up 2,000 years ago, who's this itinerant Jewish preacher who has some nice things to say about how we can live better lives. That's such a reduction, of course, because this is the creative power of God happening through the Son. Mm-hmm. So any thoughts on that?
Yes. I like your point of how, like, Logos, you're absolutely right, is like very difficult to translate. Yes, it's the word, which means God creates through a word, right? The Father speaking, Genesis 1, like the Father speaks, God speaks, and then there's light. Let there be light, and then there's light. Like the word is so powerful and so alive because God is so alive. He's much more alive than we will ever be. He's more real than ourselves. But it's also, to your point, of like the logical meaning of things, and that just gets me into the point of nature, right? And we talk about nature certainly in the sense of going outside into nature. Letters from the Colorado Trail, we're out in nature. But philosophically, when we say nature, how do things work according to how they're designed, how they're made, right? Metaphysically, we talk about natures in that sense. And so what's the nature of a human being in the sense of how does a human being work? And that's why I think this is so important, because nature has to do what is natural. And this is why there's so much confusion in the world today, because what's natural to a human being should be, I think, fairly evident when we study this stuff. The challenge today is like, oh no, it's not natural for me to be inside this body, therefore I, you know, think differently. And that's problematic, because there is something natural, right? Even when we talk about natural law, like it relates to this in a certain sense, to say like, what's natural for a human being to work the way that it's supposed to metaphysically? Is it natural to kill someone? No. And that's not, we don't, yes, we know that through divine revelation as well, but first and foremost, we know that because when we kill our own species, like, it causes harm. It's natural law. God reveals it also in divine revelation, because we're dumb and we need the divine revelation. But it leads me to realize, like, there's an intelligibility in things. And when you say, the world is intelligible, it makes me think, yes, because there's something natural to us and there's a nature that determines of how we're called to act.
Yeah, I think that's right on. And we've lost a sense of that things have natures. Maybe a practical example will help, because this is pretty lofty stuff. So one of the things I hate most in the world other than karaoke is cooking. I absolutely hate cooking. I find it extremely stressful.
You're so funny.
Grocery shopping. These things are just, they're just side story real quick. I finally figured out, oh, I can buy all groceries online and they'll just bring them out to my car. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh, this is real smart. Did I tell you this on Saturday?
You did not know.
So I get there and I'm like, this is brilliant. And I'm also like reflecting on like Guardini, and I'm like, this is kind of part of the dehumanization of our artificial world of like, I just show up in my car, I'm on my phone, I scan this thing and somebody brings, it's very transactional. Mm. But I don't want to go to the grocery store. Anyways, I think I'm outsmarting the system. And then all the King Soopers employees are on strikes. That's our local grocery store. And so they're like banging on my windows and giving me, you know, manifestos. And I'm just like, so you can't get away from the human experience, even if you want to. But I'm cooking, and one of the things I have to do is have avocados ready. So this is, and I should just keep it more simple, but my sister's a great cook, and she likes this Lily, or I think her name's Lily Eats and Tells. Is that?
I don't know, but quinoa bake.
It was a great Southwest quinoa bake. The point of this is to say I'm cutting avocados, and I'm butchering them. And Larkin walks in, and he goes, you don't know how to cut an avocado. Let me show you. And he shows me how to cut an avocado. And you know what? It's amazing. It's very easy. Mm. Do you know why? Because avocados have a nature to them.
Sure.
So the way you cut an avocado matters because of the nature of the thing. There's an intelligibility to how the core is in the middle of the thing. And if you want a cube or whatever you want to do to it, like, you use the knife in such a way, you're working with the avocado. Versus what I was doing was just macheting the thing, trying to pull it out, you know, and it just looked awful. So that's metaphysical, and that sounds really funny to say that, but it's kind of like metaphysical. And I had this great theology professor in Rome, Giulio Maspero, used to say, when you go to the restaurant tonight, the waiter says, will you have meat or will you have fish for your secundi? And he says, you're thinking about the nature of fish, you're thinking about the nature of meat. He said, you're doing metaphysics. Mm. That's very Italian, right? Everything comes back to food eventually. So just The idea that things have natures is communicated from the fact that they're grounded in the fact that they have being. Mm. And one of the things that we love about being in the backcountry, and the reason we're going back into it, is because we want to be immersed in natures, created natures, not nature as this kind of self-subsisting, autonomous thing that has nothing to do with God, that's kind of just the playground for our awesome millennial existence. That's not it. It's really about immersing ourselves in the kind of unbelievable symphony of creation as it's revealing itself as being to us. I tell this story in the book. It's how far are you in the book?
I'm done.
You're done. Okay. This is a very hippie moment, but it's real. You've been to the Golder's Cabin in Telluride.
Mm-hmm.
I love this place. And I remember one night I had been in silence for a week. I go make a retreat out there every year, and I just walked outside, and I'm looking at an infinity of being, because it's just miles and miles of trees and mountains, and sun is setting, and I just was like, everything is being right now. And it felt alive, like, and not in a pantheistic way, but just in a sense, in a deep metaphysical way of just like, things really are, and they are being right now, and their being is participating in God's being. So God is not the trees, but the trees exist, and their natures are given through the logos of creation, through Christ, who is the Word and the intelligibility. He's the expression of the Father, the ineffable source of all reality. And these things are all being, and they're all in Christ. And so the Christian really has to love creation. And I think, again, the whole point of this book is to immerse ourselves in the backcountry, in the places that are not urbanized, in order to just re-encounter creation as a relationship and as this kind of logos-centered, you know, unbelievable, again, symphony of meaning, just the purposefulness of things. They're not, they don't really have purpose, but they're meaningful. And I talk about that in the book as well.
Yeah, when we say the world is intelligible, we mean it's understandable.
Right.
Right. And so when we look up at the stars and we see how they work, and the rotation and revolution of the earth around the sun, the rotation on its axis, like, that teaches us something. Like, we can understand more about the universe by studying it, and then all the way to the smallest molecules and whatnot, right? The fact that there's a periodic table of elements, which, it was so funny that we had our trivia bowl in our school, and then we had this seventh grader who has every element on the periodic table memorized, and he would just like go through it over and over, and I'm just like, I don't even know they're like the first three. Yeah. You know, but it's like, there's an intelligibility to this. It's understandable, and sometimes we have to get out of the urbanization of things, out of the city, and go and just like, right, for lack of a better word, just like play in the sand, play in the sandbox, like get out and get our fingers dirty and get dirt under our fingernails and go and figure out how things work. And there's something so profound about going out in the backcountry and doing that, going camping, going hiking, where we experience maybe like our own poverty of like, I don't know if there's a bear around the corner. I don't know if there's whatever. Is this bald eagle going to, you know, squawk at me and come and fight me or whatever? It's like, we're so poor. And because we realize like, I am just a being in this created universe that God has given to us. And it's really important for us to see the metaphysical reality around us.
And I think in some ways kids are like the best metaphysicians, because they're just fascinated by things. They're just absolutely captivated by it. Like, my brother is down in Florida with his family for a few days, and I was like, what are you guys going to do? And he's like, kids are going to play on the beach, and I'm just going to hang out with them. He's like, they're going to literally play in the sand and build sandcastles for 12 hours a day. Like, they're just, that's what kids do. They're just fascinated by the meaningfulness of things, and then their capacity. Play is such an interesting thing for children, because it's the initiating world of co-creation in God. They're imaging something of God when they create sandcastles and they build things out of Legos, and just like, there's something about the way that we do that, but we got to keep them grounded in the sand, like you're saying, and not on phones and not lost in the artificial world of the technocracy that we're living in. And that's the tragedy, is when kids lose that because, quote unquote, that's what everybody's doing, and that's a huge temptation. So We're getting ready to turn off the phones again. I have not been in the backcountry this immersed since Caro Trail 2.5 years ago. And so it's a reminder for us to really just kind of get back into it. But maybe as we kind of conclude here, Lent is coming in a few weeks. And it's time to kind of sharpen our metaphysical lens, so to speak, to life. Mm. It means being attentive to the reality that things are being. There's a kind of receptivity that's really hard to cultivate in our modern world because we're so active and we just want to do, go. And it just spins us up in anxiety and it just leaves us so unsatisfied. And so one of the things I'd invite people to do is like find a way to be a little more bored or have some more play or have some more reflection or have whatever you need to just get back below the level of activity and back to the grounds of being. And that, and a lot of that means just being. And the best three ways to return to that are silence, solitude, and stillness. Mm. Just to slow it down. And I am the worst at this. So this is why I go to the backcountry, because I can't seem to do it very well in the modern urban world. But we got to keep fighting for that. And it's a great way of thinking about Lent. Especially because sometimes Lent gets kind of framed in this moralistic structure of like, all right, now I got to get my life together and figure everything out. And it's like, mm-hmm. No, just be more grounded in the reality of being, and you'll discover God. He'll become alive in a new way.
Yeah. Yeah. I like just the word boredom there. Like, be bored with your thoughts in a certain sense. And of course, you can never get enough Catholic stuff you should know. So don't stop listening.
Don't ever stop doing that for sure.
But when you go for certainly know yourself, right? When I'm in the car, I can't think very well. So that's why I put on the radio or the podcast or whatever. But oftentimes, if I just go for a walk to clear the mind, like at lunch, either I pick up the rosary or sometimes just like I leave my phone on my desk and I come back in a half hour. And that's actually like really liberating for me just to like get around the block, have my phone off or just away from my phone. That way I can just clear my mind. Because when you go for a walk, typically the first thing you do is take out the appendage. As John Mark Comer says, like our phones just become another appendage to us, and we just look at it, right? And screen time, your app will now show you how many times you pick up your phone throughout the day. And it's like, how do I have 200 pickups in one day? It's like probably because I'm around it too much. So I just like that idea of like boredom, like leave your phone and just like go for a walk and be bored with your thoughts.
Yeah. So I think as you're hopefully reading this book, hopefully this is something you've never thought about before and it makes sense. A couple of the chapters are very specifically focused on the notion of being, the notion of logos, the idea that the incarnation elevates metaphysics, Greek metaphysics, to become what we call theology, the God's self-disclosure. So all of these things are kind of played out there, and I just think that they are, hopefully it's helpful a little bit, a little fodder for the fire.
Awesome.
All right. Should we do shout outs?
Let's do it.
I kind of want to shout, this is a weird shout. I want to shout out your Camino group from last year. Cause I had a long conversation with Landon Baird, yesterday. Shout out to him, and his buddies. But two of the girls on your trip, well, Morgan is obviously great. Morgan Rogers, we love her, but two of the girls, Sarah Vall and Kristen
Yanif,
mm-hmm. are my, I don't know if they listen to the podcast, but they are my nephew's teachers. And so I just want to apologize for the craziness of trying to educate Lynch boys. And I mean that, of course, joking, because they're great, great guys. Mm-hmm. But it was just really great to reminisce on Landon's experience. Landon was one of the guys on the Caro Trail with me, and then also on the Camino with you, and just him sharing the graces of your group. So to your crew, Father Jacob, of course, was on it as well.
Mm. Yeah, that was an incredible trip.
And Cecilia Berry.
And Cecilia Berry, also a teacher. Yeah, that's right. She's had the Lynch boys too. All three of them have. Incredible experience. I'd like to shout out maybe just one person this time, right? Other than the whole world.
Other than the whole world. All the animals.
I would like to shout out Aaron Wolf, who I think sent me a Leo Tolstoy book, and on it he wrote, "Merry Christmas, Father Sean, Wolfie." There's only like two people in my life who've ever called themselves Wolfie. I texted Aaron, he was just like, "I definitely did not send you that." So I have no idea who sent me this Leo Tolstoy book. It was either Aaron Wolf or Jared Wolf, both were in seminary. One's a priest, one's not. Aaron Wolf is married with kids now, in the La Crosse diocese. Jared Wolf, Bismarck diocese, Father Jared Wolf now. I don't think it was him. So either Aaron's lying to me, or there's someone else out there who is referring to himself as Wolfie, and I'm forgetting about you, and I'm sorry. But regardless, I'd like to shout out Aaron Wolf. Whoever sent me that book, please let me know so I can give you a proper shout out.
Excellent. All right, good. Well, let's take a break here. We're going to record round two before we head on the Benedict 100. The second one will come out after the trip, and we'll have lots of stories, I'm sure, to say. But for now, thanks for listening. And Father Shani, thanks for announcing. Pray for Father Sean as he heads here towards his new assignment and new chapter begins. And again, we love hearing from you. March 2nd, book launch. If you can make it, reach out to us if you have any questions. CatholicStuffPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening.
Thanks, everyone.